Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Todd DeCercio is an American artist who lives and works in New Jersey, USA. His drawings and paintings are created within and respond to the corporal context of the staged live performance and special event with acts such as Mac DeMarco, Broken Social Scene, Post Malone, The Rolling Stones, Ty Siegel, New Order, Cage the Elephant, Blondie, Morrissey, Dope, Lemon, Guided by Voices, Kings of Leon, Dinosaur Jr., Baby Shambles, and on Broadway with Sweeney Todd and In the Heights, among others. Concurrently, his observed studio work addresses the exo-distortions inherent in the patterns of displacement and excess strewn across American society, finding truth in portraiture. He's a fantastic painter who will wind up in museums, in my opinion, one of these days. But tonight, he is here with us now. Welcome, Todd. How are you, my friend? What is going on?
Thank you, Joseph. Hello, Joseph, my old friend. It's been too long. That was a fantastic introduction. Thank you. Oh, man, welcome. I miss you. I miss you. I miss hearing your voice. I miss seeing you. I miss you, too.
Yeah. Well, so Todd and I are friends. Todd has been a very supportive cohort of mine during rough days, you could say, and just somebody whose friendship I value a great deal. But as an artist, he's fantastic. You should go check out his work, maybe even while we're talking on his Instagram. He posts a lot of it. Todd DeCircio, DiCiurcio. Find it. Check it out. Watch it while we're chatting about it and more. What is going on, man? So you're in New Jersey. You're painting as ever. What's the latest in what you're working on?
Just wrapped a project in Encinitas, California, for a new restaurant called Tamaki Bar, which was fun, and got to pretty much bomb the entire space. And it was a big mural commission, and it's also in collaboration with Rob Machado, who's a surfer icon, legend, shaper, and friend. And then I'm just painting here in the studio. I'm here in the studio right now. I can't see you, but I don't know if you can see me. I'm just sitting in here, but this is where I work. And so now I'm in New Jersey. Surrounding myself constantly with work, just as you are.
You have to survive these times for sure, man. You have to keep the work alive, the power of the imagination, investing yourself in artwork. I define the best times of my life from when I've been most creative. And it's almost like anytime I engage in a new set of work, whether it's painting or writing or video making or music, I always think upon its inception that I'll be going for past glories or this, that, and the other thing. I'll kind of have doubts about it all along the way. And then once I've gotten worked a lot in a certain field for a certain time, I'll realize that I invented another golden time just through the force of creativity. Can you relate to that at all?
Yes, absolutely. I think that as you work, you're reacting all the time, and you know, your best work is coming from being a great observer. I mean, that's how you make art. That's how you express yourself, in my opinion. And the observations you make are really searching for truth. So your expressions are going to resonate with that, and then you'll hit, you know, these thresholds that they can either be projected or they're, you know, just things you happen upon, but they happen upon because you keep working towards them. And those are pivots. And those pivots then relate back. They keep, it in my work at least, they keep cycling. Like it's like a circle. You know, they keep cycling, they keep growing. And so let's say it's every fifth work and the fives relate to the fives. The ones relate to the ones, the twos, the twos. It's super interesting how it works. It's almost like its own type of wavelength.
Yeah. And you just kind of, well, you said you were collaborating on a level with a surfer, I imagine. And your work has that kind of element to it. That doesn't surprise me. Now, when you do this big mural work, for instance, how do you format something like that? How do you plot it? Do you just improvise it or do you think about it? Do you put an idea into a computer and superimpose it on the wall before you start? Or do you just go in?
I just go in. I make no plan, no plan. And if it's, you know, if that's something that a client or a collector wants, then they're better off with another artist. Personally, my work is, it's very spontaneous. I work straight from the hip, you know, and so I work just that way. I love making marks that way. To me, that's what keeps it exciting. It keeps it fresh. It keeps it honest. And you still don't lose any of your, you know, growth in that. So you're not technically, you know, going through the motions, so to speak. You're just always taking in what's happening around you and breathing it in and exhaling and getting marks out.
You know, and then there's like, I call it the Bob Dylan versus Leonard Cohen thing. It's, you know, Leonard Cohen famously said, second thought, best thought, which is just a complete, rebellion against the famous quote, first thought, best thought. And Bob Dylan would write these, you know, immortal songs in 15 minutes. And Leonard Cohen would always talk about taking 5 years to write a song and multiple years. And so there's the artists like yourself that shoots from the hip, the kind of Jackson Pollock. I'm much more in that vein as well. But then there are the other ones. There are like the Leonard Cohen ones. There are the ones that would take that mural project and go, let me put it in a computer first. Let me like have my plan. It's just interesting. I'm sure you've encountered artists like that before too. I've encountered ones like that that I really respect as well. It's not like I just respect the ones that shoot from the hip. But there's definitely those two factions of artists, I feel like.
Yeah. I have friends that most work that way. I mean, if you've watched someone create a mural, you'll see that they're, you know, working from a smaller work, of course, that they have a grid on it and they're projecting it onto the wall. And so they're going square by square, so to speak, to create the larger picture. And I think that's respectable as well. I respect it all. I think it's great. It's the process of art. That's the beauty of it. It's all very different. And just, you know, in the vein of respect, you can just understand like how different they really are than each other. You know, I find it very challenging to work like that. It's very challenging to me. It feels stifling. And that's just me. I think for others, it feels like, you know, great catharsis for them. And that's how they get, you know, their ideas out. And then I have those same people say to me, like, I don't know how you do what you do. It literally scares me to death. And it doesn't scare me whatsoever. And if it is, you know, kind of fears ride, quote unquote, then so be it. Then I like that. Because what else is more inspiring than fear itself? I think that's kind of how you're going to get your best work is working through fear.
Yeah, fear is definitely fuel. It reminds me of Johnny Rotten's book, Anger is Energy. Those, the, you know, feeding off of the negative emotions. I mean, almost every time I perform a show musically, there's a lot of nerves beforehand. And that feeds always into the performance. So there's definitely something to be said for having that nervous energy where you're. putting your back against a wall, like especially like in a mural situation, you know, in a canvas in a studio, there's always another canvas you could get. But with painting, you can always just keep painting as well. Like you can always just over it and start.
You can paint over, you can add, you can subtract. I mean, you could try to work backwards. You can really think about things that can create differences in your work and then put you into areas that you're just not, you know, really touching the ground and you're a little bit off. And that's exciting. I still get that feeling when I work in every capacity and I love it. And I think that's what drives me. If I ever got comfortable, it just wouldn't be fun anymore. And I just don't think I could work like that. I understand what you're saying musically though, because when I would paint shows, and even like when I did your portrait, the last time we were together, it's that moment before I work, it's that you get these butterflies and nerves, and that's kind of like, you're just kind of built up to do something. You just don't know what you're going to do. Sometimes musically though, I mean, you know what you're going to do, you know, the songs you're going to play. You know, I like to think I know the marks I'm going to make just because of the shapes that I see in front of me, but that's all I know, you know, and then you're playing through different keys and tones and strings and you don't really know what's going to happen. You work towards, you know, a type of, you know, I guess perfection, but it's never perfect, is it?
No, never.
No.
It's always never, surprising. Never. Never has it been perfect. I don't think perfect exists, you know.
It doesn't. That's a good
thing.
How did
you discover your gift for painting? What led you to this path?
Yeah, you know, when I was young, I loved to draw. I just always did. And I didn't think much of it. I just loved it so much. I wanted to be around, like, I wanted to have paper and crayons around me. Most kids do. I mean, at least in my time growing up. Now it's a little different because kids kind of go in and out of things quick now. But when I was younger, it was, you're from the same timeline, I think, and we would do something for hours and hours. And what kind of, I got into this channel of understanding was I would use the static on the television to attach a piece of paper to it. And I would try to trace what was happening quickly. And I think that's something that always kind of stuck with me, and that I just always wanted to capture something moving and what that looked like. And what was the best way to do that when you could look at a static object and still think that it's moving, or you captured some type of movement? And I guess that's become more clear to me in recent time, I realize now that's where a lot of that inspiration comes from. But I mean, I was literally tracing Michael Jackson doing the moonwalk, you know, at the,
that's wild.
You know, was it the AMAs way back in the day?
Right.
So, and then like football games and trying to capture athletes catching balls. And, you know, I didn't have a way to stop it or pause it. We didn't have on demand. It was just happening. And so I was just going along with how it was happening and getting what I could. And some of those old drawings are hilarious. And they were a point of inflection for me where I knew things were going that route. I always wanted to try to capture things from life.
What do you think was in you that led to that inspiration? That's an unusual thing for a kid to do. I mean, I watched Michael Jackson on the AMAs as well, but I didn't try to do that. I just tried to moonwalk like him and couldn't even
come close. I did that too.
But then again, nobody really could come close to his moonwalk. Even people that can kill the moonwalk. Something about the way he did it, they'll never be. I don't know what it is, but there's something about the way he did it. Forget it. Anyway, what do you think?
Moonwalking and breakdancing and everything, but yeah. I just wanted to. It was a lot of art for me was always an escape. There was always something that I needed to get away from in kind of my everyday. So my family situation was a little bit strained. I'd say a lot of it strained. So for me, I just, I could do that. and no one would bother me. And I could just keep that going. And I just always had it. And it is definitely a gift because it's something that just comes very natural to me. You know how people will tell you, oh my God, I couldn't draw a stick figure. And another person picks up a guitar and goes, I couldn't even play one note. But if you practice, if you really want to do it, you can do it. You know,
I mean, to need to do it. I think, like you saying, you came from a strained family situation. I think most family situations are strained to some degree or another. It's hard to be. Like we said, there's no such thing as perfection, and there's no such thing as perfection in that realm either. But art is like the gift that God gives certain people to get out of situations and then explore the sort of gift of their imagination through it. So it's amazing that you found that.
Thanks. It's just always been there. I feel it's something that I've always been able to use to grow something, and I'm still learning so much from it. And I think that when I was exposed to tools in art school, when I finally got to art school, and it was then the chosen path, it was where you're learning how to manipulate paint, and you learn all the quote tools of the trade. And then I just found a couple things that just resonated with me so much. And they were simple things. They were, to me, the easiest of them all. To others, the most difficult. One of them being, you know, gesture drawing, blind contour drawing. People hate that. Most artists are not interested in working that way. To feel like you can't see what you're doing when you have a perfectly good set of eyes to, you know, follow up your marks. And I always felt like it was almost like you were pulling something from another consciousness that you couldn't see. And that really lit me up.
Let's talk more about that right after these words on TNT.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
CBS News, and I'm using that term very sarcastically, has just admitted, after 2 years of lying. Oh yeah, Hunter Biden's laptop? Yeah, that story's real. We all knew they were lying. The only people who didn't think they were lying were the mush-minded, mouth-breathing morons that believe everything their TV says. You know the type. Wear your mask! All of a sudden, these genderqueer theory majors and English majors and history majors were virologists.
Wear your mask! Do it for others! You're selfish! You want people to die!
Shut up, Karen. We were right. They were wrong about everything. They were wrong about masks, they were wrong about social distancing, and they've not only been wrong about these mRNA injections, my opinion is that they weren't mistaken. They acted with malice aforethought. They knew these things were poison. They did it for power and for profit, just like they lied about Hunter Biden's laptops.
The Timothy Shea Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here in conversation with Todd DeCercio. He's a painter and an amazing one at that. So painting is, I've heard, described as a performance caught in time, that you don't actually see the performance, but you see the result of the performance. The painting just becomes evidence of a performance that had occurred, and it's trapped in time. There's this piece Keith Haring wrote, after the completion of my first video piece, me painting myself into a corner, I am becoming much more aware of movement. The importance of movement is intensified when a painting becomes a performance. The performance, the act of painting, becomes as important as the resulting painting. Movement as painting, painting as movement. Now, this reminds me of you, because you paint, and your paintings also have a visceral, moving quality that reminds me of Keith Haring to a degree, although it doesn't look anything like his stuff. But also you perform with musical acts. Does any of this stuff I just read about Keith Haring resonate with you, Todd?
Yeah, absolutely. Keith Haring, funny enough, I have a story. When I was 14, I went to New York on a field trip, and a friend of mine and I kind of diverted from the group who were going to the MoMA, and we were in the back of the bus, and when everybody walked in the MoMA, we darted down the street and went to all the way downtown to Keith's pop shop, and Keith Wow. was there on a ladder painting his ceiling. I bought a t-shirt and a pin from him. I was beyond inspired.
Wow.
And I think that was part lit. And I went to Kutztown University for fine art, which is where he's from. I didn't even know that was where he's from until I got there. I had no clue, which was interesting enough. I went there because my cousin went there, and I was following him. He was like my brother. And it was just like, well, I know someone, and, you know, I'm going to do that. And oddly, there's these interesting things that kind of cross up with Keith. And one thing I've said about my own work, and I've written about, like he has about his, is that when with the musicians, when I work with them, it's done during performance, but it's not performance based. Wherein what I'm doing is reacting to and trying to create a dialogue between the visual art and the music. So the marks and the music and what's happening there. And it's become portraiture over time with all these different acts. But it's a really strict, you know, dogma, if you will, of a timeline, how I'm doing it. It's just super strict to understand. And then you then start to realize what the movement is inside of it and how everybody operates inside of that, which is super interesting. It brought out so much of me, like when I loved it so much, because I loved drawing from life, everything about it. And I love music so much that I can't function without music on in my studio most of the time. And, you know, as soon as we get off this, I'll be downstairs putting on a record. And, you know, and I just, that's kind of how it is for me. It's so important. So then the rest of the work.
Yeah, go ahead. No, you go.
No, you go.
You go. Remember the Yugo, the car, the little one? Anyway.
I do. Remember that little guy.
Yeah, that little guy. What happened? Maybe that's what'll save the world. Bring Yugos back. Now, listen. Do you think that your idea to perform and capture music and capture live events and be a part of that is an attempt to get some of what you love about music and capture that into painting?
Yes. There's something that gets, you know, injected there. I don't really know how to explain it or what it is. I guess just the tie to who it is for me makes a difference. Just for me personally. And I'm not always trying to let everyone in on who or what I'm speaking about in my work. I would rather the viewer has an experience and gets lost in there somewhere. Maybe they find it, maybe they don't. But when it came to the bands, that was important to me. What I found out later was amidst friends telling me to just own it and be that, I realized that when people saw the works, they weren't necessarily turned on to who the band was. So they weren't checking titles. They weren't looking at who the band was. They were looking at the composition and the marks. And I found that super interesting because at its core and the foundation of this was to do just that, to try to create a dialogue. And I found out, I guess, in some ways that I had done that in the slightest of ways when some people would see it that way. Others would then, if they could figure out who the band was, then it meant more like, oh, I see, you know, I see Mick Jagger, I see so-and-so. But I thought it was more important the other way.
Huh, it's interesting. It's a conversation between music and visual art that's entirely unique. And, you know, you can kind of choose your own adventure with it, which is what's great about art. It doesn't it can't define the observer's experience. That the observer, it's a collaboration always between the art and the observer anyway. So it's some way to engage the imagination of the observer. So in some ways it doesn't really matter, but it's kind of cool that it has that layer for people that are fans of whatever band you've painted or performed with in that case. Anyway, let's go to the quick headlines. We'll be right back with Todd DiCircio right after these words on TNT.
Matt Boyland here with a check of your TNT headlines. Hungary's foreign minister has spoken out in defiance of EU and US pressure over his country's ties with the Russian nuclear sector. The death toll from the devastating earthquake in Indonesia has risen to 268 as rescuers continue to recover bodies from the rubble. And Poland's president has been fooled by a pair of Russian pranksters into believing he was speaking with the French president, telling him he doesn't want a war with Russia.
For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm in conversation with Todd DiCircio, painter extraordinaire. Now, Todd, we're living in extraordinary times. I know you know this. And plus, you're over there in the East Coast in New York, which is in many ways one of the ground zeros of this whole wild time in society that we're in. How has this moment in history affected your work? Or has it?
Oh, you couldn't get better fodder than what's happening or what has happened the past 3 years. I mean, it's just been absolutely incredible to see happen and be in the middle of. I think in New York, the ground game's completely changed. It's just, well, immediately separated a lot of people. The divisive ideology behind it started working its, you know, its own magic on people right away. You know, the psychosis of it all. But yeah, I mean, for what the work is, I started reacting. And if you have seen any of the paintings, I've only done one show during the pandemic at UTA Artist Space. And, it was in the middle of it And it was a group show at UTA. And it was called Emergency on Planet Earth. It couldn't have been more direct to what was happening. The difference between what I had done, I mean, everybody's work was different in the show, of course, but the main difference of mine was that I actually created the work during the pandemic. A lot of others kind of piped their work in from other time periods prior. And I felt that it was important that I react directly to what was going on. And that's where that work came from. And I found that there was a lot of back and forth about it, but no one really wanted to put their finger right on it, for sure. It's interesting. I mean, you and I have talked so much in between all of this that what's happened has just been ridiculous. I mean, you left New York on account of some crazy stuff that happened. And I immediately, my walls just went up. My walls go up anyway, but as an artist, I just kind of took a step back and just started going at it and painting and just reacting to things and piling them up. So I tried to keep my mouth out of it, only because I knew that my work could handle what was going on, even though, you know, I've gotten hot over a lot of it. It's just unfair. I mean, at the end of the day, we're watching, you know, a true attempt at genocide. And so to me, when I see all this going on, I just, that's like where it started for me. And that's kind of where it ends. So I'm kind of reacting to that, and I'm picking apart all the little things that put that all together.
Yeah, there's this film that just came out yesterday called Died Suddenly. It has Richard Hirschman on it. He's the mortician that's been talking about all those strange clots that he's finding, and he thinks it's as a result of the injections. And, you know, I don't know, it kind of went viral. I had a friend call me up today about it today and say, hey, I saw that thing, you know, that movie. I don't know if you happened to see it. It was going around Twitter yesterday, but the numbers and stats and everything and what these guys are saying certainly point in the direction of some kind of genocidal agenda, and that we're still being confronted with it is crazy to me. I really don't understand it.
You can't. It's impossible to understand because it's, honestly, it's evil. So we're watching evil manifest right before our eyes. So that's what's happening in that space. That isn't to say that evil can't be beaten. Evil can be beaten, and it will. And I think that people are waking up to real facts and understanding what the facts are now, as opposed to what was marketed to them for profit and control and not for regard for human life. So, and I mean, as like I said, as an artist, it's just no better time to really react to things. But I do see a shift in art that's definitely won't touch any of that. So I wonder why, but it's just oppression, you know? It's like the whole like push against freedom of speech. I mean, you're using these public platforms that are private companies, and they're basically manipulating your right to free speech. And people are acting like they are wielding the rights of the Constitution when they're just wielding the fine print of a private platform. And so the only way to get back to it is just get back to real life and understand that free speech is real. We have freedom of expression. We have free speech. And if you don't like something, that's okay. We should be having open and honest debates about all of this. Yet it just seems so one-sided / drunk on power deal that we're seeing. And it's unfortunate. And I'd like to more debates.
Yeah, free speech is real, and you're right that we could live our life in real life and have free speech, but the public square has become Twitter. You know, it it should be considered as such, really. And, you know, now Elon is liberating free speech to some degree, but then still making emotional decisions and personal decisions about free speech for others, and widely broadcasting that thought process, which is very odd, if you ask me, because I would think he would want to duck the tag as the kingmaker or the, you know, or the king, you know, and he's leaning into that to a certain degree. And yeah, we do have free speech, but at the same time, the price you pay for it is crazy. It's massive if people can cancel you and all this other stuff. And for artists, that's one thing, but you know, for other people, they have their jobs and their families to feed and whatnot. So it's, you know, it's hard to overcome the pressure to keep your mouth shut. But the thing is, as an artist, if you liberate your voice, yes, you get canceled or whatever that is for a time, but then you can at least participate in the conversation. What you're talking about is a lot of artists aren't even dealing with what's going on, and that's as a result of the fact that they have decided to keep their mouth shut, and in doing so, essentially have canceled themselves, which is the craziest irony of it.
I guess I'd say that, you know, speaking on topic about what is actually happening, because it's so reactory to, and the you know, the plot lines keep changing, the goalposts keep moving, all this weird stuff keeps happening, but we know in your heart what the reality is. The reality of it all is they pushed poison for profit, and our government funded it, and I don't think that that's okay. And so these are the things that they want to back off of, and it's happening. You're watching the backpedaling happening. You know, the ivermectin debate, which is a joke, and you know, and I just there's all kinds of discrepancies. The people still want to shame you for saying any of this, but again, freedom of speech. It's okay. We can talk about this. You're not right. I'm not wrong. So I just feel like that's kind of how it always felt from the beginning, because like I said, from the start of this, being a good observer is really important in life. And so I feel like the second you and I heard the words 2 weeks, we knew something was going on.
Yeah. You know, I kind of clocked it around 3 weeks in. I was like, fully out of it at that point. For the first couple of weeks, I was going and buying tons of supplements and taking cold showers every day and quit smoking and all the rest of it. Turns out nicotine helps against COVID, though, from what I've heard. But you were talking about Keith Haring earlier, and that brings up old New York. And I wonder if I left something on the table there, if you like had any interactions with Keith. But and I wanted to bring that back around to and not go out of the conversation we're just in, which is, what's New York like now? Because I've been gone now for 8 months or something like that. So, you know, it's fading. I miss New York. I love New York. I can't help it. I'm going to always love it. But what's it been like now? How would you describe how it's been and how it's different from that time when you were a kid hanging out with Keith Haring?
Well, that was literally when I saw Keith and bought some goodies from the store. It was,
you still hung out with him, dude.
Was it like 1984 5? So
that's,
I know,
the classic.
And I didn't hang out, man. I just dropped in and he was busy, but he was the only guy there. And my buddy and I were like, whoa. And so
I'm going to still say you hung out with Keith Haring. That's how
I wish I was hanging out. We, by the way, to follow up on that story, we spent the rest of the week, me and that kid, his name was Chad. We spent the rest of that week in school suspension. When we got back, apparently we ruined the whole field trip because they went on a rampage trying to find us. You know, there's no cell phones.
Oh my God.
And so the moral of the story is it was worth it. How has New York changed? Well, that scene that I...
Okay, so how has New York changed since, like, in the last, like, you know, since I left, it got pretty bleak. I've heard it's on an upswing.
I think,
and then you can compare it to New York. But also, what do you think? How is it now?
I don't think, Joe, there'll be another, like, Renaissance peak like we experienced. You know, think of all the people we interacted with when we were there. And I mean, just it was so much more in the moment. Now everything's like planned. That's what it feels like. It feels a little more planned out, your experience. Whereas, you know, we would just get up and I would go walk around the city and just whatever happened, you know, and I would make a day happen without ever making a plan. Now, I think it's a lot more planned.
For days, you could do that in New York, man. I remember one time I was at dinner with Lou Reed, and this is going to be name droppy, but it just goes to show you with what can happen in the New York you're talking about. I was at a dinner with Lou Reed and Nick Cave and a few other luminaries, and I had gone out earlier that day and forgot my wallet. So I had no money. I was on my bike in shorts and flip-flops and wound up at a fancy dinner in that getup with no money, sitting at a table with those guys. It was like, that's what New York was like, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And that's what it used to be. All right. Let me take a quick break and then I'll let you chime in right there. We'll be right back with Todd DeCircio right after these words on TNT.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
It used to be said that the Democrat Party was the mommy party, saying yes to everything and handing out the goodies. And that the Republican Party was the daddy party, saying no and being fiscally responsible. Well, those days are long gone because both parties now say yes to everything and hand out the goodies. No, instead what we have is the grown-up party and the toddler temper tantrum party. Republicans, even though I disagree with them on a lot of issues, are the only grown-ups in D.C. Democrats, meanwhile, throw a toddler temper tantrum at the drop of a hat. Whether it's the squad being oppressed by this or that, the Antifa BLM riots, Russia, 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 Mueller-gate, impeachment 1.0, impeachment 2.0, FISA-gate, Trump's Mar-a-Lago break-in, the J6 sham hearings. Doesn't matter what the issue is, Democrats throw toddler temper tantrums. Well, they need to be treated like toddlers, sent to their room without dessert. For MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has slammed the unprecedented infusion of private money into America's elections, calling the tactics of the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, totally unacceptable. DeSantis stated, so Zuckerberg, he spent over $400 million through these, quote, non-profits to, quote, help with election administration. But what they would do is they would require certain things to be done, like mass mail balloting, ballot harvesting, and they would focus on partisan voter turnout, basically. That was totally unacceptable. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson doubted whether Mark Zuckerberg's highly partisan 2020 election spending was even legal. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, commenting about an investigation by the Wisconsin legislature into Mark Zuckerberg's election influence, asked, "Did Mark Zuckerberg purchase the Wisconsin presidential election?"
We don't rock. We talk. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back on Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast with Todd DeCircio. New Yorker painter and all around amazing dude. So yeah, we were just talking about the heyday, the glory days of New York. You could get lost for days there, for sure. Just and it would unwind like an adventure. It's you know, the energy of the street. You know, there's so much emotion. And New York's the most emotional city in the world, I think, because it's all on the street. Everyone's like wrapped up together, and there's just so much energy and emotion. And I think that's what makes it one of the hardest places to leave.
Yeah, the streets are like a, you know, it's like a playground. They're like slides. You're just like, wee, yeah, into this next situation. And I mean, think all the nights, I mean, just you and I with Entwined Nights and all the people that would just drop in and out of that and get up
that
there.
That was
and
nuts.
Play. It was crazy. Dude, none of that's happening. Trust me, not even close. And that was incredible. Those things would just happen. It was like a happening every day. And
yeah,
that's what I loved about being there. I don't even know you what know, story I could tell. I was thinking about it during the break, and I was like, there's just so many stories. I was going to yell to Megs and be like, what should I tell them? what avenue do I go down?
Well, if you have a story at the ready, go into it. Otherwise, I have another question for you. But, you know, that those Entwine Nights are, you know, are just the music, people getting together in community. It seems like that could happen, though, relatively easily. Is it just because there's the forces of repression that their influence is felt? Because they've gotten rid of vaccine passports and all that kind of stuff, right? Or is there still that oppressive energy going on the streets there?
I don't think in the streets it's happening. I didn't feel that down on the, you know, because our friends who, you know, own these spots and bars that we would go to that still own them are like, just get in here. They're not checking stuff and doing that. They're not going to be a part of that because it's killing their business and they know it. And that was the whole point of it, right? So
yeah,
I think it's coming back. Like you said earlier, it's going to come back, but with planning, you're going to have to think about it. Whereas you didn't think before, you just went for it. You just did it. You applied yourself to what was happening and, you know, it would lead to you run into somebody and they're all of a sudden in your studio, and then you go out and you have a dinner, then you go see someone perform. And now, oh, you're going to do a live show. You want to do it tonight. Let's go. And then, you know, that's how things would just kind of keep moving constantly.
Mm.
So I think it reflects a lot more. Yeah. It's like Windows now instead of Mac.
Yeah.
Here in Windows, that's what we got now. We're the new
Bill
Windows
Gates
platform.
Made it instead of Steve Jobs. That sucks. Now, when you describe New York like that, it reminds me of an artist in a flow state. Your work embodies flow state. It looks like flow state. But I'm wondering if it's always like that for you, if you ever face resistance and what you do to get beyond resistance. What do you do to get yourself out of the space when you're depressed or it seems like it's not worth it? Or do you ever get into negative mind states and have to overcome them?
Oh, I think everyone does. I think, you know, that's normal. These are just the challenges of everything. But I think you always have to remember that no matter how bad anything is, that it's meant to be and it's written. So you should take it for what it's worth and move on with it and turn it into something great, turn it into something else, make it work for you. I don't think there's any other reason. I don't think there's any other way out of those situations other than what I just said. That's just how it has to be. So if it's flow state and that's what, you know, brings it through, yes. And, you know, do I paint every day? No. Do I surf every day? No. So there's, you know, I read, I love to, you know, just, I will sit and stare at things till something else happens, till I think I can see through it. I imagine I can see through it, minus the LSD. I imagine that I can, you know, make things invisible or make them come through things. And that's what gets me to try new things, I think, in painting as well. Almost like dimensionalizing with things, with objects, negative space.
And then I'm that still becomes thinking emotional. Of you saying minus the LSD. What do you mean by are you taking an LSD over there in Jersey? What's going on, Todd?
Oh, well, I've had plenty in the past, so I can kind of drum up the feeling whenever I need it. It's not that difficult. So the flashback button is an easy one to press, and I could, myself into those things and just kind of make that feeling. But I'd say a lot of what that did at the back then was more, it addressed so much fear-based understanding. And so it's easier to access now for me in that regard.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite painters? You brought up Keith Haring. I don't know that he was necessarily a big influence, but what were some of your main heroes in painting?
I think Keith was like a scene hero. He wasn't like a painting hero for me. Painters I love were like Matisse, and I love Sigmar Polk, and
I love him too.
Yeah, there's just some people that transcended things that I just thought were fascinating. I love Richard Phillips's work, who's a friend of mine, and I've just seen him. I know what he did in his early career, and I know what he does now, and it's such an incredible arc to see. So he's another one. Matthew Barney. Who doesn't love what he did? The Cremaster Cycle. Right. And like, when that happened at the Guggenheim, I did the literally 6 days there and did the whole entire thing, all the films, all the exhibits, all at once. It was intense. I don't think I've seen an artist do anything like that ever since, actually. One of the biggest productions I've ever seen. Yeah.
And that was films and painting. Explain that a little bit if you can.
So Matthew Barney's contemporary artist, and it was, yes, he made, what do you make, four, I think, motion pictures.
Four films, that, yeah.
They're all art films. And it's like Cremaster 1, 2, 3, 4, I think. Yeah, almost positive. And they're just these intense experiences of art and music and location. That you've ever seen. I don't even want to give it away. You just have to watch this stuff because he combines everything from, you know, modern sports to, you know, Antarctica and just like things happen that you're just like, how is he tying this all together? And it is mind blowing. So if I recommend anyone who's listening, if you haven't studied or seen any of his stuff, just peek around in there. See where you go.
Is it available on YouTube, his stuff, you think?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
Are you addressing those formats? I know you do a lot of Instagram, but have you plunged into TikTok yet, YouTube? Are you thinking about ways to expand your horizons on social medias?
I don't think TikTok is an expansion. I don't think that's going to do any good for what I do. And as far as any other social media, I have very little interest. And I, as you know, I don't really put myself out there, and I'll cover projects and things that I'm working on, but my day to day is mine. And I just would rather do things as an archive setup than have it be this, like, you have to see what I'm doing right now. I'm not too adept with all that. And I also feel like it just spreads you thin. I mean, how much technology do you want to sink yourself into? I don't know. I'd love to work more film. So I think that's something in the future I'd like to do. That could easily happen.
Yeah.
I love working.
Yeah, except for those, that's the modern marketing measures that, you know, we're confronted with, really. I mean, like the music business, for instance, it really is, you know, TikTok and YouTube and these sort of things. I wonder if painting might be similar. I guess painting's different. Well, dang, dude, we're at the last minute. So tell everyone how to find you on the social medias that you do engage in and how they can find your work and all that stuff.
Okay, well, I'm at Odyssey across the certain boards. So that's at ODDDC. And that's the way to find me or see what's
that's
up.
That's the way to find Todd DeCercio, and I recommend that you do. Todd, it's been a pleasure talking to you and catching up with you, man. I look Thanks, forward Joe. To
we love you.
More You're, of the same. Okay. Love you too, brother. God bless you, and I'll talk to you soon. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be right back with more on TNT.